And I approve them.
Okay, Representative Pence moves the meeting minutes for... February 5th, 2004. No objections or corrections. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, the PCA is here to present its bonding request. And if you want to identify yourself for the record and begin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kathy Moger. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Pollution Control Agency. I'd like to draw your attention to a fact sheet that you should have in your packet titled The 2004 Capital Bonding Issues of Interest to the PCA and the OEA. What I'm going to cover today is a quick overview of the closed landfill program, which is the area of the Pollution Control Agency's request, its statutory sources of funding, including bonding, the level of work that we propose to do with the current request, and our future needs. As you're probably aware, the closed landfill program is unique in the nation. It was created in 1994 as a result of the legislature's concern that in the past, landfills did not set aside money to adequately close and protect public health and the environment from degradation. In fact, we've just been notified that we are one of 50 finalists nationally for the Innovations in Government Award for this program. In the closed landfill program, the state assumes the responsibility for these landfills so that thousands of small businesses and municipalities are not sued under Superfund for remedial actions that need to be implemented. To be eligible, the landfill must have stopped taking municipal solid waste by 2000. There are currently 108 closed landfills that are currently in the program, and it represents about $207 million in outstanding state funding obligations over the next 30 years. There are 112 landfills that are qualified to come into the program, but not all landfills have finished doing their work necessary to come in. The funding for the closed landfill program was set up by statute to include up to one half of the solid waste management tax, any financial assurance that a facility might bring in, and insurance recovery assets that would be available, as well as bonding. When the program was established in 1994, the legislature provided for $90 million of bonding to occur in phases through the year 2004, rather than issuing the bonds all at one time. 6 years later, during the 1997 session, another law was passed that required the Commissioner of Finance to cancel unspent or otherwise unobligated bonds in odd years. As a result of that new law, it canceled the schedule that was laid out in the 1994 Landfill Cleanup Act, and it canceled the unused bonding capacity that the Pollution Control Agency had of $56 million. So beginning in 2001, the Pollution Control Agency has requested bonding authority that would allow the state to meet its outstanding responsibility for these publicly owned landfills. In 2001, the Pollution Control Agency requested and received $20.5 million for 22 landfill projects. In 2002, the PCA requested and received $10 million for 6 projects. The funding from these past 2 bond requests are fully budgeted, and we expect to spend those by the end of this fiscal year, which would allow us to finish work on 28 landfills. Our current request is for $14 million to address design and construction at 11 sites. And then in fiscal year 06, we will propose our final request for this program for $12.1 million to address the remaining 4 sites. If you look at the map on the fact sheet, you'll see the You'll see a symbol that looks like a pentagon, and that indicates the sites where we would spend the 2004 bond money. And then the starred areas represent the 2006 funded sites. And it looks fairly centered in the northeast area, but I want to draw your attention to the map in front of the table that indicates all of the areas where we've spent bond dollars to date, along with these two proposals, the one that we have in front of you now and the 2006 potential proposal. And so you can see that actually this is a fairly statewide program. The agency is planning that our 2006 bonding request will be our last bonding request for this program. We'll be into operation and maintenance after we finish this last round of construction. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Representative Rodriguez.
Thank you, Ms. Moger. From just our backgrounding, it looks like you actually initially proposed that you would get all of the dollars this year. That's correct?
That's correct.
So you had the capacity then to stage and manage the closure of the remaining landfills.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, that's correct. Over the next, since we have 4 years to spend what it would be authorized this session, we would be able to basically stage out the construction for those landfills over the next 4 years. The impact of not receiving the full request is that our construction cycle is extended for another 2 years.
Representative Morgan.
The whole point of the landfill cleanup bill, or at least, I don't know that we should call it a cleanup bill, but containing landfills was to protect our groundwater. So we will have 2 years of stuff going into groundwater that shouldn't be going into groundwater. Does this have any legal implications for us since we have already agreed to take over the sites?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, in the fund statements for the remediation fund and the associated environmental fund, the agency has budgeted expenditures as if money will come out of the remediation fund for those sites that would be delayed. And so the agency has the ability to spend what is in essence solid waste tax dollars on those sites rather than waiting for bonding. Because they're lower priority sites, we're working on our least our lowest priority sites, C's and D's in the landfill program. And so there's not a large risk to public health because there are no residents around these sites. And there is some environmental impact due to leachate and gas collection.
Well, there are two issues. There's the risk to public health, and then there's the statutory mandate that you have to protect groundwater. And that's, of course, why we started off on this process in the first place. So you're not, if we put off some of this, you're not meeting your statutory mandate of protecting groundwater is what I'm hearing.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, with the fiscal year 04, with this bonding request, we would raise our percentage of leachate getting to groundwater from 80% protected to 95%. And then for gas generated, we would go from 69%, which is the current program with these new sites with the fiscal year 04 bonding, we would be up to 90% because the majority are oriented to gas collection. So we're very close to our 100% goal, but will it take us additional time to get there? Yes.
So when you talk about the goal, help me define that. When you say it will be at 90%, that means the leachate isn't going any further, or that it means it's actually been pulled back and cleaned up.
I believe, Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, I'm going to have Doug Day come down and help me with that because I'm not exactly sure.
Welcome. You want to state your name for the record?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, committee, my name is Doug Day. I'm a supervisor with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency in the Closed Landfill Program. The question, Representative Wagenius, regarding the leachate and gas goals we have put together involve what we call reductions in leachate generation. And if you think about the landfill program, you think about the fact that our landfills, when we took them over, many of them did not have covers to current standards. And if we were to put place covers to current standards at all those landfills, we would be at 100% of our goal. That's basically the way we've worked things. So if we are at, as Ms. Mover indicated, if we are at 90% of our goal, then we have 9/10 of all of our landfills having covers to current standards that didn't previously have covers to current standards.
Representative Wagenius.
Okay, I understand what you're talking about, but I'm talking about the measure of leachate that's moving in the groundwater. How are you doing on the measure of leachate moving in the groundwater? I mean, you can't assume that because you've covered something, there's no leachate moving.
No, that's correct. And we recognize that with these landfills, in this program, we were dealing with landfills who were unlined. And so we did not have the ability to capture all that leachate. There is a certain amount that's going to escape that we cannot address because of the unlined nature of these landfills. Well, we have, our goal is based upon what we can address through the establishment of covers to current standards.
Representative Wagenius.
If I go back in my memory, I don't think that was the intention of the initial of the bill that we passed, because it seems to me that in some cases you could put in wells and make sure that leachate was not going any further, that it was limited to where at least wherever it was, or to be pulled back. And I'm not hearing that. What am I missing here?
The majority of sites, we are not undertaking active measures other than placing the cover on these landfills. At certain of our sites, however, you are correct. We have groundwater pump and treat systems where we are, as an example, at the Anoka Regional Landfill in Ramsey, we have both barrier and recovery wells at that site, and we are pulling the groundwater plume back because it was we were concerned that it was going to impact drinking water supply. And so we were pulling back the groundwater. We were pumping millions of gallons a year, and we were treating that groundwater. And then it's, after it's been treated, then it is infiltrating back into the ground after it's been treated. We were doing this at a number of sites. I think it's 8 total. We recognize, however, that almost impossible to try to collect all that leachate that is generated, and we've tried to focus on what is feasible for us to collect, and that's what we're doing right now.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wagenius.
Wasn't necessarily that we were going to collect all the leachate, but we wanted to make sure it wasn't going any further. And it seems to me you do not have a system, even though certainly the intention
of the original bill was to make sure that leachate wasn't going any further from, I mean, 8 sites is one thing, but you have over 100 sites. So how are you meeting your statutory authority of not degrading groundwater if you don't have at least monitoring wells that can tell you that this stuff isn't moving any further? Because you can't assume, just because you've covered it, that the leachate isn't moving any further.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bouguenais, that is correct. And we do have monitoring systems around all of our landfills, and we are checking them on a quarterly basis. And the sampling results indicate to us that the groundwater contamination and leachate is not moving beyond where they were before. In fact, in a lot of cases, we're finding that because of the new covers we placed, and especially because of the active gas collection systems, we've seen a significant reduction in leachate in the groundwater.
Mr. Chairman, can I have one last
question?
Okay. Can you assure me that you have enough wells around each landfill that you will know whether or not leachate is moving out, and that you have enough test wells and are testing them frequently enough that you can assure us that groundwater is not being further contaminated?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Mulger, or Mr. Day, I'm not sure which one of you, you made mention, Ms. Mulger, in your statements that one of the reasons for the bonding was so that individuals wouldn't be sued that had used the landfill. As a businessman that used one of these landfills, I think in the 80s, we were approached, and if I'm not mistaken, we certainly were exposed to the ability to be sued for using those. So can you clarify what you actually said and what really did happen?
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, what happened was, like yourself, thousands of small businesses were being approached by the largest contributors to waste in a particular landfill site because we were taking enforcement action under Superfund to get those sites cleaned up. And as a result, those biggest contributors turned around and basically created demand letters to those that were also contributing smaller amounts of waste to the site, demanding that they too contribute to the cleanup. That's actually what led to the creation of the closed landfill cleanup program, which Representative Bouguenais was the chief author. Because the state took over responsibility for landfills that came into the program after they had met certain standards, the state, there was no longer those lawsuits in place. And right now, I think the only landfill that's currently on the Superfund list is Freeway Landfill, and because Killian is in the program now. So I think there's just that one site that's outstanding yet, and we haven't taken enforcement action yet against Freeway Landfill.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the net effect was small business people like myself did not end up being sued? Thank you.
That's correct.
Yes, to follow up with Representative McNamara, one of the reasons I am so concerned that leachate does not move beyond the sites is that your liability is probably still there, but as long as we can keep the stuff from moving out, then there is nobody who is going to sue you because nobody else, there won't be a cause of action. So it's extraordinarily important that we keep that stuff from moving out beyond the site.
Okay. Other questions? Anything else from the department?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, the department gave us some copies of the impaired waters stakeholder process, and if members would like a copy of that, we certainly have it for you, although they will be making a presentation, I believe, in the policy committee on that report later on. So rather than just giving you something to haul around, we just wanted you to be aware that it's here if you wanted for reading it. With regard to, you know, if we can get, we have them up here. If anybody wants one, just let us, let one of the pages know, they'll get it for you. Let's see, we'll now hear from the oh, we have one other item also. We'll be handing out these little cards, and there are reports that are coming out from the PCA that they have on website, and so you can, they will identify these for us, so you can pick those up off the website and help with regard to some of the paper proliferation around here. Let's see, we will have now testimony from the Metropolitan Council regarding the regional parks bonding requests. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Arnie Stefford. I'm a planning analyst at the Metro Council in their Parks and Open Space program. And with me today is Glenn Scovolt, the chair of the Metropolitan Parks and Open Space Commission. The commission is appointed by the Metro Council and advises the council on policy and fiscal issues regarding the Metropolitan Regional Park System. We thank you for the opportunity to present the governor's 2004 bonding recommendation of $7 million for Metro Regional Parks. I'd like to present my testimony in a PowerPoint show, and I'm waiting for the computer to reboot itself here. But a copy of the slides along with a detailed list and location maps of proposed projects or projects proposed to be financed with the $7 million is included in your packet. Bear with me here while I get this running.
While you're doing that, I think what I'm going to do is revert to another little item of business I don't believe will take much time. If Representative Kahn asked a question the other day, and Mr. Reinholz has some information for us. Mr. Reinholz?
Mr. Chairman, members, there should be one page in your packet for today that is on the side. It has fund statements from the Environmental Fund and the Remediation Fund. And I'm going to move through a few numbers out here to answer the question.
Representative Kahn, when OEA was here talking about their capital assistance program, raised an issue of if there were funds other than general fund available to do some of the projects, either to pay the bonds or actually to use for that. And the fund that Representative Kahn mentioned really was Solid Waste Fund, no longer exists. The action of this committee last year created the Remediation Fund and broke the old Solid Waste Fund up into either the Remediation Fund or the Environmental Fund. And so if you would start with the Environmental Fund, and I'll show you what's going on, and there were numerous changes made by the committee last year in the bill as where the money moves. But really what it's going to show is that we're using most of the money available for other activities approved by the legislature already. In the Environmental Fund, the large item under taxes and receipts, it shows $33 million for fiscal year 2004. That money is primarily what the solid waste tax dollars coming in. That's the fee on household garbage and commercial garbage coming in. Now, it used to go into the Solid Waste Fund, now it comes into the Environmental Fund. And then action taken last year allows that money to be used for a lot of other purposes. We allocated that money out, used to be used for more stricter purposes. Now it's being used to run some things in the agency where there were deficits in various programs. So, but you can really see if you follow that down to the bottom, you'll see at the balances, it does show there is a balance. On the Environmental Fund side, in fiscal year 2004, go all the way down to the very bottom row, and it will show that there's a budgetary balance in 04 But if you look across as it's going forward, we end up in 07, which is the last year we followed through on, with only $1 million worth of balance. So there's very little, shows very little dollars here. But one of the things that's going on that is hard to follow is transfers out. And the way we set up these funds, we now transfer dollars. We put the tax dollars from solid waste into the environmental fund under the taxes. We use it for various purposes in the agency in OEA, and you can see also in DNR and Ag. And then we also transfer a significant amount of it out. If you see transfers for 04, transfer out to the remediation fund is listed at $16 million. So that's a significant part of the expenditures of the total of 89 available. So now I'm going to say, now we're moving. That's why there's two funds. We're moving, follow my, the trail of money here. We're coming from the environmental fund, and now flip the sheet over, and you're into the remediation fund, which is what we now use, as Ms. Mulger described, to clean up landfills. Primarily, we've transferred that money out of the environmental fund and into this remediation fund. And they are proposing that they will be allowed to use those dollars to clean up the private landfills. That will go along with the bonding dollars, if it's approved by the legislature, to clean up the public landfills as part of the closed landfill program. The trouble we have here is if you go down in fiscal year 2004 to the bottom row, you'll see we're way in the negative, actually, on this fund. Part of it is because of, if you move up above the reserve line, we have some reserves, but they're really not a budgetary balance requirement. It shows that we're only $6.829 million in 04 in the negative in this fund. That will be solved partly by, if we do the bonding, that if the legislature does approve the $14 million worth of bonding, $14 million worth of expenditures won't be done here. So it's very complicated. There's money moving all over, but the decisions are tied together on the bonding and the appropriation of this dollars. But the effect is there's really not a lot of money if you move out to 07 available for any other uses and are already planned by the legislature.
Representative
Conner. Well, Mr. Chairman, the point I've been trying to make, and I thought of it last night again when I heard Speaker Spigum say that the amount of bonding is limited by the amount of money that we've budgeted for debt service. Well, the only money we've budgeted for debt service, as I understand it, is general fund dollars. And specifically in this division, we have other dollars that if people thought it was important to advance capital projects could be used for to back up bonds. And, you know, I assume at some point the bond council has to say whether they're regular or not. But when you have long-standing fees, I think they are. For example, instead of just doing appropriations from the Water Resources Fund, which we use for docks and for accesses and things like that, we could use money to bond for it. You know, no, it does cost, it costs more in the long run, of course, because you then pay interest on the bonds. But the point is, the reason we bond for highways instead of build them an inch at a time as the money is available is because you get a lot of projects done and you get a lot of use over it over a long period of time. It's the same principle that the governor did this year when he cut back the operations in the Department of Transportation and took a, cut a big chunk of money and used it for bonding for road construction. So it's something that I think that we ought to be thinking about. You know, the state, I have problems with some local units of government, particularly my city, with bonding for things which aren't capital expenditures, and that's the kind of thing that goes you going down on the fiscal responsibility list. But anything that we think is appropriate to advance and to have operating right away, you know, for example, any kind of brownfield cleanup and something like that, which gets land ready for development, is there, you know, and again, I'm not sure that that's a bondable expense. I'm not entirely sure that it's a bondable expense or not. It probably is if it's with a project. It's very worthwhile all looking at what we should do for bonding and not consider ourselves limited by the amount of general fund debt service that we have.
Is there any further clarification needed on the information that Representative Wagenius?
Yes, if I could ask you a question, Mr. Chair, following up on what Representative Kahn just said. One of the issues that we have to deal with is all of these small septic systems all over the place that are leaking, and I think somebody said yesterday it was a third, and I think it's like 240,000 septic systems. If we could get some of those on a, get a group of people together, like around the lake or whatever, to get onto one system, we could bond for that. And it seems to me that since all the proposals for dealing with leaking septic systems were in the impaired waters thing that doesn't have funding right now, that we could possibly be somewhat creative in this committee, use the bonding, as Representative Kahn says, and look at some of those wastewater treatment septic systems where you could get a bunch of neighbors together. And I
clusters.
He knows the words, I don't. But I would hope that you could help us out and hold a hearing on that and figure out if that kind of thing would be possible, and that we could advance at least that one thing to protect groundwater this year.
And I believe we'll be talking about the individual septic systems later on.
But I'm just talking about a way to fund, and so that takes it two steps beyond. Can we aggregate into clusters, number one? What's the potential there? And then can we use some bonding dollars out of this committee? So it's kind of a three-step process, if you will.
Okay. Any questions that you have on the information that Mr. Reinhold has presented? Okay, thank you for that. And if you'd like to continue then.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to cover four topics in my testimony. First, I'll explain why the governor is recommending $7 million for Metro Regional Parks based on the purpose of the 1974 Metro Parks Act. Second, I'll describe what the Metropolitan Regional Park System is and how it is managed. Third, I'll summarize past state and Metro Council capital spending for Metro Regional Parks in the context of the governor's recommendation. And fourth, I'll conclude with the benefits received from the state's capital investment of $7 million for Metro Regional Parks. To answer why the governor is recommending $7 million for Metro Regional Parks, we'd like to quote from the 1974 Metro Parks Act. Under the purpose section of that statute, quote, "The legislature finds that the pressure of urbanization and development threatens valuable recreational open space in the metropolitan area at the same time as the need for such areas is increased. Immediate action is therefore necessary to provide funds to acquire, preserve, protect, and develop regional recreation open space for public use." Although this was written almost 30 years ago, it still rings true today. With increasing urban development to support 1 million more people by the year 2030, immediate action is necessary to provide funds to acquire and develop regional recreation open space for public use. To answer the question, what is the Metro Regional Park System, we go to Minnesota Statute 473.147. There, the legislature has directed the council, in consultation with the Metro Parks and Open Space Commission, local units of government, and the public, to identify land and grant funds to cities, counties, and special park districts to acquire and develop a system of regional recreation open space, which together with state parks and trails will reasonably meet the outdoor recreation needs of the people of the metropolitan area. The legislature defined regional recreation open space as, quote, "land and water areas and facilities determined by the Metro Council to be of regional importance in providing a balanced system of public outdoor recreation for the metro area, including but not limited to park reserves, major linear parks and trails, large recreation parks, and conservatories, zoos, and other special use facilities." Today, there's about 51,800 acres of the Metro Regional Park System. When the system was created in 1974, the council designated 31,000 acres of existing parkland as regional recreation open space. Over 20,000 acres of new parkland has been acquired in the past 30 years, and about 170 miles of regional trails linking some of these parks together has been developed. In compliance with the definition of regional recreation open space, the park system currently includes 46 regional parks and park reserves, 22 regional trails, and 6 special recreation features. In 2002, there were 30 million visits to the park system. This map illustrates that portion of the metro regional park system in the city of St. Paul and suburban Ramsey County. The medium green shaded areas are regional parks. They are between 100 and 500 acres in size and contain outdoor recreation facilities for picnicking, swimming, boating, fishing, and non-motorized trail uses. There are 35 regional parks in the system. The darker shaded green area at the top of the map is part of a park reserve that goes north into Anoka County. Park reserves are between 1,000 and 5,000 acres in size. At least 80% of the land within a park reserve is managed for environmental education purposes. The remaining 20% is developed for more outdoor recreation activities like those provided at regional parks. Camping is also typically provided at park reserves. There are 11 park reserves in the system. Regional trails link the parks and park reserves together. This map illustrates both existing and planned trails. Note the Gateway State Trail in blue, which is linked to other regional trails and regional parks. Finally, there are special recreation features such as the Como Zoo and Como Conservatory in the Metro Regional Park System. Your packet contains more information on each type of park unit. To address how the Metro Regional Park System is managed, the legislature directed the Metro Council in consultation with the Metro Parks and Open Space Commission to prepare a 6-year capital improvement program, or CIP, that prioritizes capital spending for the park system. State funds proposed in the Metro Regional Park CIP finance 60% of total project costs. The remaining 40% of the CIP is financed with bonds issued by the Metro Council. The Council's bonds are paid for with property taxes collected in the 7-county metro area. As required by the Metropolitan Parks Act, cities, counties, and special park districts, which we call regional park implementing agencies, are authorized to do 4 activities. First, they prepare park and trail master plans that describe the unit's boundaries, proposed outdoor recreation and environmental education facilities, and their estimated costs and phasing. These plans are subject to review and approval by the Metro Council in consultation with the Parks and Open Space Commission. Second, the park agencies seek funding to implement the approved master plans by requesting funds from the Metro Council and the legislature through the Council's Regional Parks CIP. As noted, 60% of the CIP is proposed to be funded with state appropriations and 40% is financed with Metro Council bonds. Three, after appropriations are authorized, the park agencies acquire land, rehabilitate existing parks and trails, and develop new parks and trails in compliance with the CIP. And four, the agencies operate and maintain their portion of the park system. This slide illustrates who owns and operates, maintains these regional parks. These park agencies, with the exception of Three Rivers Park District, own local parks as well as regional parks. The local parks are not part of the Metro Regional Park System and are not eligible for funding through the Regional Parks Capital Improvement Program. Staff from most of these park agencies are present today to answer any questions you may have that go beyond the details in this presentation. The third topic of my testimony deals with past capital funding for Metro Regional Parks in the context of the Governor's recommendation. From 1974 to 2003, $226 million, or about 60% of total state and Metro Council funded capital spending, has been for rehabilitation and development of outdoor recreation facilities, with $141 million spent on land acquisition. Based on the total of $367 million authorized, the average amount per year of state and Metro Council funding has been $12.6 million. Of the $367 million authorized to date, about $229 million was financed with state bonds or funds recommended by the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources, the LCMR. The Metro Council has provided almost $138 million from the sale of general obligation bonds and interest earned on bond proceeds. The Governor is recommending $7 million for Metro Regional Parks. The emphasis is on rehabilitating existing parks and trails with $4.6 million proposed. Land acquisition needs $1.5 million and $892,000 is proposed for new park and trail development. The $7 million of state bonds would leverage about $5.4 million of Metro Council bonds and $5.4 million of federal T21 grants for a total investment of $17.8 million. The state and Metro Council bond portion totals $12.4 million, which is close to the $12.6 million annual average of state and Metro Council funding in the past. However, with the additional federal funds in this recommendation, $1 of state bonds will leverage $1.54 of Metro Council bonds and federal funding. As with other federal grant programs, the T21 funds would be lost to other states if the non-federal match is not appropriated. The state bonds, along with the Metro Council bonds, are key in capturing the federal appropriation. This map illustrates where the funds would be spent. Land acquisition would go to areas shown in green. Please note that in Dakota County, acquisition would not occur in every park and trail that is shown. However, a block grant would provide funds to acquire land from willing sellers when land came on the market within approved park unit boundaries. Development of new parks and trails is shown in red, and rehabilitation would occur in areas shown in blue. More detailed maps and project descriptions are contained in the back of your packet. The Metro Council, in cooperation with the regional park implementing agencies, measures how many visits occur in the Metro Regional Park System annually. This data is used to distribute state appropriations to help operate and maintain the park system and to prioritize capital spending projects. From 1975 to 2002, visits have grown 600%, from $5 million to $30 million per year. The significant increase between 1995 and 2000 is due to more use of the parks in the spring and fall and the development of regional trails linking the parks together and making them more accessible. Metro regional parks are regional because they serve not only the people who live nearby, but also a significant amount of people from other counties and cities in the 7-county metro area, plus folks from greater Minnesota and tourists from outside the state. The metro regional parks are owned and operated by cities, counties, and special park districts. A non-local visitor is a person who resides outside that park agency's jurisdiction, but in this pie chart, inside the 7-county metro area. Folks from greater Minnesota and from outside the state are also prominent users of the park system. As this pie chart illustrates, 59% of the visits are by persons living within the park agency's jurisdiction, while 41% or 12.3 million visits a year are by persons living outside that county, city, or special park district. Consequently, it is reasonable for a portion of Metro Park System capital costs to be financed with state funds collected statewide, along with Metro Council bonds paid for with property taxes collected in the 7-county area. My final topic addresses the benefits received from the state's investments in Metro Regional Parks. The primary benefit is economic. Regional parks help attract businesses and people to live here. A mail-in survey conducted by the Metro Council last fall found that parks and open spaces were the most attractive feature for living in the 7-county metro area. Studies done locally and nationally have found that parks, especially parks like regional parks that have outdoor recreation facilities that use natural resource features, increase residential property values of land within 1/2 mile of their borders compared to comparable residential areas that don't have as close access to such parks. Another economic benefit of Metro Regional Parks is the tourism revenue they help generate. 4% or 1.5 million visits per year to the park system are by persons coming from outside the state, both domestically and internationally. That's comparable to the 1.6 million of out-of-state visits to the state park system. The Metro Regional Park System is second only to the Mall of America in its attraction based on annual visits. In addition, as noted previously, 12.3 million visits are from outside a park agency's jurisdiction, so there is a positive benefit to the local economy as well as to the state's economy. To conclude, the governor's recommendation of $7 million for Metro Regional Parks had three primary benefits. One, for every dollar of estate funds leveraged by $1.54 of Metro Council and federal funds, the funds help provide land and park infrastructure to serve 30 million visits per year, of which 12.3 million come from outside the park agency's jurisdiction. That's why these parks benefit the state and the metropolitan area. And three, the funds help the economies of the state and metro area by attracting people to live here, helping to increase the local tax base, and attracting out-of-state tourism revenue. That concludes our testimony. Thank you for the opportunity to present this to you, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
We have questions. Representative Pennis.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just for knowledge on the land acquisition, how do you go about that? Do you have a limit over the appraised market value on the land that you can pay to purchase that land? I know you said willing sellers. Just give me a little insight on that.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative, no, the land acquisition for these regional parks is comparable to acquiring land for state parks. We follow the same types of regulations and procedures.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tingleson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Stefford, appreciate your presentation here. A couple of times you referenced tourism dollars to the state. Do you have some kind of number about what that amount is?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I'm hesitant to give you a number because we haven't done an economic impact study specifically on these park visitors as to their spending patterns, but based upon other types of studies done for recreational visits for the state park system and looking at the numbers of our visits, it's comparable to the economic impact of the state park system from that standpoint, but I really shouldn't give you a number because we can't back it up with really hard research.
Thank you. And just to follow up, Mr. Chair, Mr. Stefferud, in the comments, let's see, your slides on page 11 of our handout talks about the parks and open spaces being an attractive feature according to a Metro Council survey. I know that several communities in the metro area have also done similar surveys for their communities, and I think there's a nice tie-in here with some of the things that the governor's talking about in terms of quality of life issues. Could you maybe expand on that a little bit, please?
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, the survey was a mail-in survey, representative sample from throughout the seven-county metro region. And of the features that attracted people to live here and what they liked about this area compared to other metro areas that they are aware of in other parts of the country, parks and open space was their number one choice. 33% of the respondents listed that as the most attractive feature for living here in the Twin Cities.
Thank you.
Other questions? I have a question on the match to state bonds overhead that you had up there. It shows that the where the federal T21 dollars really come into play with regard to rehabilitation and development. But underneath acquisition, you have the Metropolitan Council match having the biggest impact there. What happens to those Metropolitan Council match dollars if we did not have acquisition? Are they available for moving down into having a better match on rehabilitation, or what is the source of those Metropolitan Council dollars?
Mr. Chair, the source of those council dollars are bonds issued by the Metro Council as general obligation bonds. And the match table that you're referring to, we try to maximize the use of the state funds. The governor's emphasis was on rehabilitating existing units and land acquisition with a small emphasis on development. So we were able to move our money, if you will, the council's bonds in places where it made sense to come up with a total package where about 40% of the total, when you combine state and Metro Council funds together, 40% of that total is Metro Council bonds. And in regards to the question about if there's less money appropriated for acquisition, would there be, would the council bonds move down into rehabilitation? No, these are tied programmatically within our request. 25% of the total request is for land acquisition. X amount is for rehabilitation and Y amount is for development. If you give us less than $7 million, 25% of the reduction would be applied to acquisition, et cetera, for, you know, the proportional amount for rehabilitation, et cetera. So yeah, they're of equal priority, but projects compete within the acquisition category, rehabilitation category, and development category.
Not if we put in writer language that tells you where our dollars will go to, though.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. This is what our proposal is at this time, and that, and if there is no rider language, that's how the funds would be spent. At the back of your packet, it illustrates where projects are in priority order within those categories.
Okay. Mr. Chair, T21 dollars, tell me something. I know nothing about that.
Mr. Stepperud.
Mr. Chair and Representative, T21 funds are federal transportation enhancement dollars, and local units of government are allowed to request these federal funds for transportation enhancements, including trails. Okay. And in the back of your packet, there are specific projects that have received T21 grants or will be matching T21 dollars. That total the amount that you see there, $5,425,000. And therefore, it's important that the non-federal match be appropriated to capture those funds.
Okay. Further questions?
That helps.
With regard to T21 dollars, is there, what is the cap on the T21? Are they available for whatever money we are able to put up in order to capture those dollars?
Mr. Chair, the cap, again, we've got a list of projects. You see what's there. I can't say that there's a cap per se, but this is what would be, that made the list of the governor's recommendation. And the projects that are illustrated there illustrate what would be capturing T21 funds.
I guess the, for example, if the state bonds were not in acquisition but were down into rehabilitation and or development, don't we capture more T21 dollars doing that?
Mr. Chair, yes, you would. That's, you know, in part you see that the biggest chunk of the governor's recommendation is for rehabilitation, and that captures the most T21 dollars in that category.
Representative Wasley.
Mr. Chairman, I think we're on the same wavelength, because I was going to ask the same question, maybe a little different way of putting it. Are we leaving any money on the table? Is there a way to capture more of the federal funds?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I don't have the other part of the list that wasn't funded by the governor or recommended by the governor. There may be some other federal T21 dollars that are not being captured, and I'll have to get back to you on that.
Fair enough. I wanted to ask a question, Mr. Chair, if I could, on the Metro Council bonds. Is that, when I get my tax statement, at the end of the year, it'll have Met Council and other taxing districts. Is this funded through the levy that's provided for Met Council and regional government?
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes. The debt service on the council bonds is included in that number.
That's good to know, because I have people ask me about that, and if you can say it's for parks, I think that's a good response.
Other questions? President Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You may have mentioned this, but you help me along here. The $4.6 million set aside for rehabilitation, Give us a context here. What is the outstanding amount of rehabilitation work that needs to be done?
Mr. Chair and Representative, in the context of, as you say, outstanding rehabilitation, I couldn't give you a number off the top of my head. Again, I'd have to get back to you on it. About a year ago or 2 years ago, we asked the park agencies to submit a 10-year capital needs listing, and a big chunk of that was for rehabilitation. But again, I can't give you a specific number at this time.
Representative Genius.
Mr. Chairman, I would appreciate it if you would give us that number just for the rehabilitation part, so we can get some sort of sense of context here, because this number sitting alone helps me not at all in knowing what kind of dollar we need for rehabilitation.
Other questions or concerns? Any additional testimony or information? Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, for the record, I'm Glenn Scoble, the chair of the Metropolitan Parks and Open Space Commission. I would only like to just emphasize maybe three things that have been said in terms of the testimony here. Well, one is a personal observation, and that is I have been very impressed during the short time I've been chair of the commission with both the professionalism of the Met Council staff and the regional park staff in working on the regional park system, and also the degree of cooperation that exists between each of the agencies. A couple figures that I think are worth bearing in mind. We had 30 million visitors to the regional park system in 2002. It's a significant number of people. As Mr. Steprud said, natural resources is the strongest asset the region has in terms of the people who live here. The most important figure, I think, is the 1 million figure, which is, and you hear this in a lot of contexts, is that by the year 2030, we're going to have 1 million more people here. And if we want to continue to have natural resources up at the top in terms of the amenities. And when I say more, I don't mean just acquiring more, but I mean renovation and development of parks. So this has got to be, in my opinion, one of the parts of the puzzle that we put together in terms of dealing with this growth of people who are going to come here in the next 30 years. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair?
Tinglestead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looks like we maybe have a couple minutes here. I know that LCMR with the Park Study Group worked hard in the interim looking at Metro Parks as well as State Parks and Greater Minnesota Regional Parks. I'm wondering if Mr. Steffrud would give an update of kind of where the group is, what the plans are, kind of as a result of the LCMR report released last week.
Okay. Mr. Steffrud. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. There are three things that the regional park implementing agencies are working on regarding the LCMR park study. First of all, after this meeting, I'm meeting with the folks from the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and the State Department of Natural Resources regarding utilizing $6,000 of the LCMR funds to do a comprehensive and what I would call a consistent inventory of what are regional parks in Greater Minnesota, so that can lead to a step two. There will be a proposal submitted to you for 2005 LCMR funding to do a market research study on these regional parks and state parks to determine what we can do in regards to differential fees. Part of the LCMR study talked about we need to capture more of the users' revenue, if you will, by looking at what they're willing to pay for different activities and facilities within these parks. We want to be very careful and give you our best recommendations on that based upon what our customers are telling us they would be willing to pay, so that decisions can be made to increase user fee revenue for these park systems without turning away our customers. And third, there will be a proposal for 2005 LCMR funding to do more interagency cooperation and communication with the Minnesota Recreation and Parks Association as sort of the lead entity. There would be a forum that they would host regarding best management practices, plus there would be regional workshops, and there would be a website developed and by them that would be accessible to these park entities so that they could communicate in the future on new best management practices, techniques, practices, other ways of raising revenue, etc. And those are the three things that we are doing in relationship to that LCMR study.
Thank you.
I have a question with regard to the project descriptions. I see that underneath several of the development project lists, you have reimbursement for matches. Can you maybe explain as to what's happening there?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, this capital improvement program includes reimbursements to park agencies who spent their own dollars on behalf of the Metro Park system to develop a facility. And before they did that, they came to the Metro Council and sought, first of all, the approval of the council. Was that project consistent with an approved master plan? And the council said, after they looked at it and agreed that yes, it was, that they would be eligible for a reimbursement in a future regional parks capital improvement program when funds became available. The state bonds are not proposed to finance these reimbursements. Metro Council bonds are.
I think it's important for members to note that. We also have, I think it's consistent with how we handle some of our highway projects also, that we can have local governments make commitments in order to be able to get some improvements made into the highways, but then as dollars become available at the state, we reimburse them. So it's a consistent pattern here. It's not something that's unusual. Any other questions you may have? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, I'd just like to mention that the information provided by presenters is in your that was in your meeting folders. Some of them have been three-hole punched so that you can put them into your note binders, and whatever information is handed out at meetings can be added to your three-ring folders after the meeting. So if there's things that you want to have included into your three-ring binder, you can let the staff know. We can get the holes punched in there and we can get it properly inserted. The other is tomorrow we'll begin with DNR bonding requests, hearing requests. The order of presentations will be the same as the information provided in your three-ring folders. And we will set aside a day also for public testimony on the governor's bonding proposals after we complete the agency presentations. So if there are people that would like to present us with information in addition to what the agencies are providing, if you'd bring that to the attention of our staff so we can get an idea as to how many people would like to participate in the public testimony. Any other business come before us this morning? Okay. Hearing none, we are adjourned.